Yeah, that's great. Choices. This one indicates, I'll get my copy out so I don't have to move yours. And I want to be sure that you understand the options. The first one says that you really aren't worried about your anonymity and that the transcript can bear your name. The next one is that the transcript be edited to protect your anonymity. In other words, your name will appear nowhere on it or any identifying information. It will be included in our archive, but it will be anonymous. That's option two. Option three is it's edited to protect your anonymity. And it
that's privacy, right?
That's right. That your name will not appear. So anyone reading the transcript for information will not know who we discussed, who
right.
we talked with. And the third one is protects that anonymity, but it also indicates that it will not be made available to the public until your death. Now, when we say public, that means it's included in the archive at the hospital. It isn't printed in a book or anything. Number four, the approved transcript containing identifying information will be withheld from the public until your death. That means it will be held back until your death or until some other date, and it will be contain your name.
Should I initial all of them?
No, you need to make a choice. And essentially your choice is, do you want your name withheld or do you want it included?
Oh, withheld.
Then the first one, if you don't mind, then
yeah.
the first one is your choice.
Okay.
Good. So as you did initial that, that's great. This is the one, yeah, this is the one that you want to initial.
Just
X that. And then if you could sign, this is your signature. Thank you. And I need one more signature from you, which is this one, which says, my signature indicates my willingness to participate in this study and your understanding that you can withdraw. If we talk for 20 minutes and you're not comfortable,
right.
you can say no more.
Okay.
Okay. I'm here speaking with Mr. David LePage, and I'm just testing to make sure that we can hear this. I'd like you to tell me a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, where you were born.
Saugus, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up on School Street.
On School Street?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And three-bedroom house, quiet neighborhood. My mother noticed a series of things happen to me. My easy bruising resulted in my hemophilia, and my mother probably got some dirty looks because because of the bruising that I had because of my hemophilia. And I had a hard time. I fell down one time.
You felt?
Fell down one time.
You fell down, yes.
And cut my lip.
Mm-hmm.
And it took several times of stitching to heal that lip because of the bleeding that's caused by my hemophilia. And the doctor thought it might be leukemia at one point, and or something like that, and I didn't have that, so they checked out my factory level, and it was low, so I was diagnosed with hemophilia at the age of two.
Two. Did you have brothers and sisters?
One sister.
Who was older than you?
Who was 3 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
After they found it, I became a failure. My parents decided not to have any more children because of that. The risk of possible carriers in my family or other brothers that might have hemophilia or sisters that could be carriers. So my parents decided not to have them have any more children.
Was there a history in your family?
I think my great uncle might have had it. My mother was a carrier.
Did she have any inkling that this was true, that she was a carrier?
No, she didn't.
Tell me a little bit about your parents before we move on. What did your father do?
He was a draftsman. He worked 40 hours a week in that at Sylvania.
Pennsylvania.
He was a machinist draftsman.
Did your mother work?
Probably a little bit here and there. I was brought up in school, you know. I was allowed to do many of the things any other normal person would be able to do somewhat as a child.
What were your parents' education? Did neither of them went to college, or?
My father didn't go to college. He just, he went to night school to develop his career in drafting.
And were they, how would you characterize your parents? Were they good decision makers? Did they come together, if you will, when they had to face this new development?
Very supportive. Yeah. I mean, I used to have to go twice a week to Boston at the emergency room to take care of a variety of things, either swollen ankles or fingers or elbow or... or even a bleed in my back, or a swollen knee. I wasn't allowed to take karate or to wrestle, which I wanted to do.
Obviously, or I wouldn't think you remembered much at the age of two.
No.
But can you remember when you first became aware that you were somehow dealing with something different than the children around you?
Well, I used to have to take transfusions, which I used to probably not like to take.
I'm sure.
And I probably didn't like having swollen ankles or swollen parts of my body. And, I would go to school and on crutches, and the next day I would be walking and the kids would say that I was faking. You know, they didn't understand the disease of hemophilia. That you could be on crutches one day and not on crutches the next.
Would you say that they were cruel? Did you experience a lot of isolation as a result of it, or were they good natured about it?
Not really, because I was always outgoing and friendly. One time I was running towards a picnic table and I hit my eye on the edge of the picnic table when I was a kid, and my eye swelled up and I had to spend a couple days in the hospital taking a whole blood. Daily trips to the emergency room were not uncommon.
Did any of the people around you at school make an effort to learn more about what was happening to you?
No, not really, no. I pretty much kept it to myself. Sometimes if I had a swollen knee, with being a wheelchair, Mm-hmm. And so the teachers were protective of me, you know, watching out for me to make sure I didn't get hurt on the wheelchair. So I don't remember much of my childhood. I mean, I was a kid that used to take his bike and go off ramps. So that didn't challenge me. And when I was a teenager, I fought my parents to take karate, which I did, but I ended up having swollen ankles. And every time I blocked a punch, it would swell up. So so it was kind of discouraging because I wanted to be a black belt in karate and take wrestling, and I want to be able to protect my faith, protect myself mm-hmm. against the world, and having hemophilia was an obstacle for that. I wasn't able to do those things.
I'm getting the impression, though, that your parents went as far as they could to let you do what you wanted.
Yeah. Until I found out it was impossible to do it.
Yes, but they weren't overprotective.
No.
Of you.
They thought I was a mild hemophilic when I was a kid. And when I became an adult, they checked my factor level again. It was a severe hemophiliac.
So it changed over time.
Yeah.
Did you have grandparents living at the time?
I had my grandparents growing up. Mm-hmm. Of course, my grandfather died when I was a boy, 3 years old. Mm-hmm. But I had grandmothers, and that were always part of my life. Mm-hmm. So I came from a very supportive family where I had a happy childhood and, you know, a very good upbringing and a nice house and a pool, and I got to swim a lot. And
did they do much to explain to you or to help you think about how you could deal with it?
They gave me a book about it to understand how it's passed from man to child. Actually, all my daughters would be carriers. All my sons wouldn't be carriers or hemophiliacs. Mm-hmm. If I married a hemophiliac woman, then I would have a chance to have a hemophilic son.
Mm-hmm. So they instructed you in all that and helped you to understand what was happening to you.
My limitations and what I could and couldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did they? I assume that with his job, your father had health care.
Yes, they covered 80% of the costs of my blood, which can run into the thousands of dollars. So my father found out that they can get help with crippled children at Children's Hospital of Boston. That's the hospital I went to growing up, is Children's Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And there I learned how to... my father learned how to give me transfusions when I was a kid, and I, as a teenager, learned how to give myself transfusions.
Mm-hmm. So, which meant you didn't have to run off to the emergency room every time.
Right.
Which was
where factor VIII concentrate became developed during my teenage years, and I was able to give myself transfusions.
That must have made a tremendous difference in your life.
Yeah. The blood supply became contaminated in 1978, which first with Ryan White and other hemophilics got infected with HIV and hepatitis. I didn't get diagnosed with HIV until 1987. And I knew that I had hepatitis in 81.
So that was the first sign that you had?
Yeah, it was very sad and devastating towards me when I found out.
I'm sure you were.
Knowing that my chances for girlfriends would be very difficult. And, but I couldn't let it affect me as a person. I became a born-again Christian, my faith, 1982, mm-hmm. where I read the Bible every day. For 22 years now, I've read the Bible every day. And my faith has helped me get through the difficult times with hemophilia and HIV and hepatitis. And then learning more about HIV and the complications about the T-cell count, the risk of infections, pneumonia, cancer, became almost real in my life, even though I'm asymptomatic at this time. Mm-hmm. But the fear of getting cancer, carcinoma, or pneumocystis pneumonia, or bacterial pneumonia, or fungal infections, or can I die at a thrush. Daily concerns with me now, even though I don't have any of them. My T cell count is 600, it's been as low as 260. Below 200 is AIDS. And since 1987, when I was diagnosed with HIV, I've been fighting the complications of dealing with this disease, as well as hemophilia.
And the fear.
And the fear.
So the physical and the mental complications.
Not only myself, but keeping others safe too, mm-hmm. from this disease. Taking the necessary precautions not to infect others with the disease. Mm-hmm. So.
I'm just going to stop and back up just a minute and ask you about that early care at Children's Hospital. From the time when you can really remember it, did you feel that the care was compassionate and all it could be?
It was necessary to get me through each day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But were your caregivers, did you feel that they helped you? Was that experience, given that it wasn't a very nice experience to start with, as good as it could be?
It was very good.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I found out I had HIV, the level of care intensified,
mm-hmm.
where I got support from social workers at Children's Hospital and Brigham and Women's Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that I could go there to deal with my HIV and hepatitis, and I could go there once a week and get counseling, and very helpful.
When you finished high school, obviously you didn't yet have the big problem that you have now. What were your goals? What did you do out of high school?
Well, I dropped out of high school because of mental illness. I had schizophrenia and depression at the age of 16, 17, 18, and continue until now. I'm 40 now. So I've had severe mental illness since I was 16, and I've been on disability since I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
So I did have health insurance for my medical conditions.
Okay. So in high school, what, a junior in high school?
I dropped out of high school.
You dropped out of high school, and what happened then? Were you hospitalized, or did you now facing another issue, a brand new type of issue, and stabilizing that?
Mm. The combination of the three.
Mm-hmm.
Schizophrenia and depression, and then in hemophilia and hepatitis and HIV. I had to juggle all of them diseases at once. I tried to take my life when I was 18 a few times. I ended up in the hospital at Westwood Lodge in Massachusetts, and I've been in a variety of hospitals all my years since I was 18 up to now. I take medication for my disease of schizophrenia and depression.
And does that help you?
And it helps me quite a bit.
Good.
And I go to Tri-City Mental Health and Retardation for my mental health work. And then I go to Brigham and Women's Hospital for every 3 months for my hemophilia and HIV care. My T-cell count is 600, and my viral load is undetectable. When I was during the 90s, they found out I had cirrhosis of the liver because of my hepatitis. And I went through an interferon treatment, which proved to be successful. Proved to be successful.
Oh, it did. Good.
And I don't have hepatitis for a year now.
Good.
I'm free and clear. I've been cured of hepatitis.
Uh-huh. But you're putting out a lot of fires.
Yeah. I have to take my medication every day, faithfully.
Mm-hmm.
And so far I'm asymptomatic. During the early 90s, I did have neuropathy, where the virus attacked my nerves and my hands. But when the viral load went down to none, this neuropathy went away.
Mm-hmm. That must have been a relief.
Yes.
It's very difficult when you...
Even with the smallest of symptoms of HIV, it can be disabling.
Mm-hmm. When did you move out of your home? Well, this is your home, but out of your parents' home.
When I... tried to take my life. My parents gave me the option of going to a rooming house or a group home. And I chose to go to a group home in Lynn for the period of September of 82 to February of 84.
2 years.
And I've been living on my own for 20 years now, juggling all my diseases, as well as a mild anemia too.
Are your parents still living?
My mother passed away in 85 of lung cancer.
In 85?
Before she knew I had HIV. And, she suspected something was going on during the early 80s, but when I found out in 87, my father, it kind of shook him up, rattled his cage when he found out I had HIV.
Did he pull away from you?
No, he didn't.
Why did your mother suspect something was up?
Oh, I'm not really sure.
She just had a feeling?
Yeah, she was hearing things that was going on, maybe in the news.
So that period of the 80s, 81 to 85, when you lost your mother, those were really very difficult years, weren't they?
I took my mother's death well. I knew she was a Christian, so that reassured me.
Good. And were they always Christian, or was this something that she discovered
later on in life? Yeah.
So you learned from her the power of that for yourself?
Well, she learned it from me.
She learned it from you?
Yeah.
So it was a gift you gave to her?
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
And I'm sure it brought her a lot of comfort.
Yeah.
And where did it come to you? Where did you discover that?
When I had my breakdown of schizophrenia, I had to reach out to a higher power where I could draw strength from in my difficult times of mental illness in 82 before I knew I had HIV.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I needed help somewhere, and through my faith, I became a born-again Christian, and I've been going to the church since 82 until now.
May I ask you, you don't have to answer, but I'm wondering how you think about all the things that have happened to you in terms of your faith. Do you feel that there's a purpose for you?
I think I'm happier.
You do?
I'm more content when I'm a Christian. Instead of being angry and bitter and having a fit of rage over my illnesses, I try to be peaceable and gentle and to care about other people.
Mm-hmm.
To be pure. It's a tough thing to juggle, but not me not working. I'm not employed because of my disability, mental disability. And it just helps me to take care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I have all I can handle to handle all my diseases without working. So it's helpful to just take care of myself and without the added pressure of working.
Do you feel that God gives us only that which we can bear?
Yes. I think in 2000, I met another Christian girl
mm-hmm.
named Kristen, and we became engaged, and then we were just going out, and she died in February of 2004.
Pause.
Of heart attack.
My goodness.
And this is the card that she gave me.
What a huge loss for you.
When I was in the hospital, she wrote to me, I hope you get well very soon. I miss you very much. I love you very much. Love, Chris. And I still have that card that she wrote.
All those years later.
Well, she died in February of 2004.
She died this year?
This year.
Oh my goodness, very young.
44.
Of a heart attack?
Yes.
I'm so sorry. You have the love that she gave you.
Yeah.
In your heart.
Yeah. She gave me that too.
Did she give you the bunny?
Yeah.
Does the bunny have a name?
No.
Chris, this is very sweet. I'm very sorry. That's a real sadness, I know.
Right.
I
do. I have found, not that it's too soon, it's been 6 months since she died, but there's somebody else maybe special in my life too that's developing into a relationship.
Tell me how, not in intimate terms, but how you deal with that in a relationship. Do you find that you know, the love comes and then, these two wonderful people are able to, you're able to work around that in your lives?
It's not not a sexual type of love. It's more of a love that we have for one another,
mm-hmm.
that even though I have HIV, I can be abstinent.
Mm-hmm.
And,
still enjoy the love.
Enjoy the love.
Which is
yeah.
the main thing.
Yeah.
And aren't you fortunate to have found two such wonderful people?
Yeah.
And they're lucky too.
Yeah. And then there was an issue of you know, justification of how I caught HIV and
in telling them about yourself, you mean? Or from given to you.
Right. I'm glad I have the relationships, and I'm very thankful for them because I do everything in my power to be likable and lovable. And they received some compensation from all the hemophiliacs who got infected from pharmaceutical companies, I won't name them, that gave me the HIV and the blood that came from their blood products. And the pharmaceutical companies for them and all. Gave each hemophiliac $100,000. I guess they were being sued too much, so they couldn't afford the cost of being sued, so they offered each hemophiliac $100,000. And it's a small payment. I feel like I deserve $500 million, and that would just take care of all my needs for the rest of my life. I didn't believe in suing since I was a Christian.
You believe what?
Didn't believe in suing since I was a Christian.
Uh-huh.
And then
so suing really went against your
faith,
your
my faith.
Ethics.
Yeah.
Did you then become part of a class action suit?
As a member of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even though I didn't sue.
Mm-hmm.
And received $100,000 and. In January of 1998,
mm-hmm.
and there was a Ricky Ray law that they offered another $100,000 from the government, who failed to reject the blood supply from us hemophiliacs and other people that received transfusions. I received another $100,000 of March of 2001. I've enjoyed the money. I appreciate the compensation they gave. It makes my life a little easier. I can eat a little better, take care of myself a little better, pay for my medications a little better. I've been fortunate since I was disabled with schizophrenia and depression in 82 to receive, you know, Medicare and Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
Which pay for my medications. I'm on I was on AZT when I first came out, and then probably I was on Epivir and Crystavan and
expensive medications.
Yeah, you know, on Varicept and Epivir and Zygen, and that can run up to $13,000 a year in the medical costs, and each water factor I take is $2,000, and so.
And they cover that for you?
Yes, they do. 100% practically.
Good. Tell me a little bit about that discovery that you made, that you were HIV positive. Are you all right? Glass of water? Was it a gradual awareness that there was an issue, and then the question was, is it me? Did you begin to realize that?
Well, they tested me for it, and I became concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And the week later, they came back to the hospital, they gave me the test results, and of course I was practically crying.
Of course you were. Your mother and father were with you. Your father.
My father.
HIV was really something people didn't know a great deal about either. I believe.
Right. And they were just handing out the pamphlets of HIV, and I was just living in an apartment in Saugus, and found out I had HIV and rattled my father's cages, and my uncles and aunts were shocked, and my sister was terrified.
Was she married with children by that time?
Divorced.
But with children?
Yeah.
And when you say they were upset and terrified, did they accommodate that?
They were very supportive.
They were. So they learned about it.
And unfortunately, I was living in a one-bedroom apartment in Saugus, and me not being afraid to tell anybody about the disease or the complications, I told my landlord, and they forced me out of the apartment.
They did?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
And I ended up living in Lynn in 80. It happened in 1987 where I was forced out of my apartment. Mm-hmm. And I found a one-bedroom apartment in Lynn and learned not to tell my landlord.
You learn honesty isn't always the best policy.
Right.
Not a good lesson.
Mm.
What was going on at the hospital all during this time? What were they doing for you and with you?
I received one-to-one counseling once a week, mm-hmm. or whenever I wanted. Very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been hospitalized several, maybe 15 times since 1987.
15 times?
Yeah.
And hospitalized for?
Depression.
Mm-hmm.
I got pneumonia once, but it wasn't related to my HIV.
Mm-hmm.
I think I caught pneumonia twice. Bacterial pneumonia and another type of pneumonia. But, so.
You found this apartment?
Found this apartment. I'm very happy here.
I should think so. It feels very much like a home.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I've been going to Tri-City Mental Health Retardation since 1999,
mm-hmm.
where I have a nice doctor, a respite I can go to anytime I want to get support, medication adjustments, the medication I take makes me have diarrhea, which can be a problem if I don't take ammonium. So,
so you have to take something and then something else.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But you're very faithful, I think, about your medications, aren't you?
Yeah.
Good.
At the most, I miss it once every 3 months.
Mm-hmm. And do you, apart from the Tri-City, do you belong to or participate in any support groups with people who share the same diagnosis?
Yes, I do.
And how are those for you?
Very supportive. I see my case manager, John Ryder, from the Committee 10,000 and the MC.
Mm-hmm.
Where he takes care of my overall HIV case management,
mm-hmm.
and helps me with my care,
mm-hmm.
home health aid if I need one, which I don't know. When I was on the interferon, I needed a homemaker because it made me sick.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, through the treatments, the interferon for my hepatitis would make me sick, so I needed a homemaker at that time. I go to a support group, in Brockton, or with all the hemophilics I have HIV.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the 9,400 hemophilics that got infected, 5,000 have already died already.
5,000 have died?
Yes.
So we're talking 4,500...
that are still alive.
That are still alive. And how are you finding their response as compared with yours when you go to the support group?
There was a large portion of people there when I started the support group.
Who aren't there anymore?
Who aren't there anymore. There are about two or three left.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm one of them.
That's chilling.
Yeah.
The two or three of you who are still meeting must have a very special bond.
Yeah, we've known a lot of people that have passed on from human fear and HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very sad. And a lot of the people didn't even get compensation before they died, before 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And the blood companies have not accepted responsibility for giving us a virus because they could be sued.
So they settle but don't take responsibility.
Right.
I see. How do you feel about that and about what they did?
Well, you know, there's a book that says dying in vain and cry bloody murder out there that didn't describe the hemophilic experience, a hemophilic holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
And the murdering of thousands of people. That's what it is.
That's what it is. Do you see your father very often?
I talk to him every day.
Mm-hmm.
He supports me. He's my kid. He's my repayee, and I'm disabled with the chemical imbalance. Some people may not want to know it because I hide it very well through my faith. And being disabled is I just can't handle the pressure of work when I'm working at all, or else I'd fall apart. All I can do right now, being disabled, juggling my diseases, is take care of myself, and as you can see.
Which you do very, you keep everything so nicely.
Yeah, I still got a lot of work to do in this apartment. But
there is. And all, as you say, all the things you need to do to follow up.
Yeah.
Are there ways in which you wish, through any of this, from the time you were young until now, that you think the healthcare providers could have been better or done a better job for you? Ways in which you wish they had responded that they didn't?
Be more supportive.
And how would that manifest itself?
Take a more active part of my life in support.
Mm-hmm.
Call me once in a while, see how I'm doing.
So that you felt they really cared?
Right.
That you just didn't go in and have an appointment?
Right.
And you were assigned a counselor and then you left.
Right.
So there is this distance, isn't there?
Yes, there is.
Yeah. Do you think they've answered your questions properly? Do you feel that you get the time you need and want?
If I ask them to, they will.
Mm-hmm. But you need to be proactive.
Yeah.
Have you found that in your caregiving experience, that in fact you've needed to really take charge?
I take a passive, active role in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I may be passive, but I'm also assertive. So I don't ask too much of my providers.
Mm-hmm.
I just go with the flow.
Unless you need something specific.
Right.
And you are learning when that is.
Yeah. Which I haven't had practically any symptoms at all, so it's more like a bit of a passive role for me, just sitting back. But I do have a nurse coming over here once a week,
mm-hmm,
to check on me,
mm-hmm,
see how I'm doing, from the Lynn VNA.
Mm-hmm. And in all the new things, what's happened with the hemophilia? Is that really not an issue anymore?
Not too much of an issue anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't injure myself because I'm not in any high risk activities.
Mm-hmm.
I might average a transfusion every 3 months or 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
which isn't nothing. So.
Can you do those for yourself now?
I do them for myself.
Mm-hmm. Was that difficult to learn to do for your father and for yourself to learn to?
No, not really, but very simple. Just like learning to take my hepatitis shots to get rid of my hepatitis.
What changes have you seen in the care and information about hemophilia that you feel have really made a difference? That's one of them, I assume, is being able to self-transfuse.
Oh, I don't know. Just call a doctor when you need to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Being assertive without being aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Going back to when you were 13 or 14 years old, how was it? Did you feel that you were leading a fairly normal life, apart from not being able to do karate or?
It was difficult in school, going up and down the stairs and on crutches, and you know, they didn't have elevators, and it was, you know, carrying my books, so it was difficult. I had to have somebody else carry them for me, and of course they probably didn't have backpacks back then, so.
No. So the infrastructure at school really didn't make it easy for you?
No, it didn't at all.
I used
to have a very difficult time carrying my books, getting to school, so.
Any special friends at school? Friends that, connections, the way that you have had these two friends, Chris and the new friend. Did you have anyone who particularly, a teacher or a young person, who made you feel less lonely?
No, not really. Just my act of faith in God. I didn't feel lonely because I knew God was with me.
When did that develop for you?
1982, when I was 18.
That's right. So the younger years, 13, 14,
9, 10. I really didn't have any girlfriends or.
Boys?
I mean, I had a friend.
Young fellows?
I had a friend, John, where I used to get into a little bit of trouble with.
That's good and healthy.
So, but never a terrible person, no.
No.
I just hung out, you know, maybe had a couple of beers when I was a teenager, so.
I think we can forgive that.
So, basically just a quiet teenage life.
Did you feel very different than everybody?
Well, with the psychological problems, it made it difficult.
When did you feel those coming on? When were you aware of those?
Probably when I was 16. 15, 16.
The depression.
Yeah, made it very difficult to work.
I'm sure it did. To concentrate.
Right, and to be able to work. And, my supportive parents were always there for me.
Isn't that wonderful?
So, if I had any close friends, it would probably be my parents.
What
I could
talk
to. My sister was nice, too. Yeah, she went to be a nurse. Yeah.
She became a nurse?
Yes.
Do you think that what happened to you influenced her in that decision at all?
No, because I didn't find out I had HIV before I was 23.
Or I just meant the hemophilia and...
Oh, I'm not sure.
May have?
May have, yeah.
She probably had a greater awareness of... I mean, your life really was very hospital-oriented.
A little bit.
A little bit, but I mean more than...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So she had that awareness.
Did
you go as a family and travel very... Did you take vacations in the summer?
Yeah, just Disney World and Orlando and South Carolina and Maine and New Hampshire or whatever. So, and then Horseshoe Falls in Canada. So,
And the, what was I going to say? I had a question that went right out of my mind. I don't know where I am. When the issue of the class action suit came up, did you take any part in that at all, or were you just included per se?
I was just included. They offered it to everybody, even if you didn't sue.
Mm-hmm.
So I took it. Mm-hmm. I was more than happy to take it.
I'm sure.
Than the one that wouldn't sue, and that if they offered me the money, I could buy things that I normally wouldn't be able to buy, like my big screen TV. And
which I'm sure brings a lot of pleasure, and the cat likes being in front of it.
So I'm waiting for a new living room set.
Good.
Coming on later on this month.
Wonderful.
So
it'll bring you a lot of pleasure.
Yeah. It just has to be delivered.
Uh-huh. Apart from your religion, which is so important, did you or do you have special interests? Did you have something that you had hoped to pursue?
No, not really. Mm-hmm. No, just being able to try to live a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was how I'm happy with. Maybe have a special relationship here or there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with somebody special. And I told somebody, I told my nurse that I found somebody special, and she said, "Well, you're special too." So
you are special.
So
she's very lucky too.
Hmm.
Tell me if there are one or two people who really stand out for you in the care experience, like that nurse, or some. Have there been one or two people who've really been different, very special?
Probably my girlfriend, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
What about in the healthcare situation? Have you come across anyone who just stands out?
Well, Laura Gray is very nice too, so mm-hmm. she's kind of nice. See how you're doing,
mm-hmm.
as well as the other social workers that have been there for me. It's Kathy Ives,
mm-hmm.
just having somebody to talk to through this whole experience of having HIV and hepatitis has been a tremendous help through the years. So
there's a lot to deal with it, isn't there?
Well, the best is yet to come.
Are you fearful of that?
I know I'll be taken care of, no matter what. They're not going to let me fall through the cracks, or else I won't let them.
No, good for you.
Yeah.
And you're still here and healthy and
Yeah, I'm
thriving.
Still asymptomatic and healthy and, you know, so I'm taking a proactive role taking care of myself there so they don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
So
have you done much reading about either the HIV, or did you learn a lot about the hemophilia? Did your parents learn a lot?
I know a lot about hemophilia, but I also, you know, have my little pamphlets on
mm-hmm.
hemophilia and AIDS and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The different drug treatments, the side effects, options, you know.
Mm-hmm.
How to take a proactive role in taking care of myself and not exposing myself to different diseases, whatever. So,
did your parents, when you were young, did your parents learn a lot about it?
Yeah.
Was it a very active approach?
Yeah, I mean, we got a book on hemophilia and we read it, so, mm-hmm. yeah.
Because that must have been quite a blow. I mean, to come out for them relatively out of the blue.
Yeah.
And to have to deal with something brand new.
Chronic, yeah.
Something chronic, something.
Yeah.
Something new.
You know, I think of my favorite verse in the Bible, which helps me get through every day, is, you know, fear not, for I am with you. Do not dismay, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you and uphold you with my righteous right hand. I guess that's my favorite verse of the Bible. Fear thou not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen you and help you and uphold you with my righteous right hand.
It's a beautiful verse, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, and it gives a lot of strength.
Yeah. And God is my refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble.
Did you go through a period of anger?
Probably, yeah. I learned to deal with that through the Bible, to get rid of all anger, bitterness, and fits of rage. Cease from anger, forsake wrath, and fret no wise to do evil.
Say that again.
Cease from anger, forsake wrath, fret no wise to do evil.
It's wonderful to find those verses that speak to us.
Yeah, it helps me with my coping skills.
I'm sure.
Don't worry about your life. You know, God knows what you need of, you know.
And it feels so unfair, doesn't it? It can.
My grace is sufficient for you. God says, my strength is made perfect in your weakness. So.
Do you go to church?
Yes, I do. Twice a week.
Do you have a community there that's very supportive?
Yes, I do.
Yes, good.
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful?
Born again Christian Baptist.
Huh?
Born again Christian Baptist.
And is the church here local?
Yeah, in Lynn.
And you speak openly about your own situation?
Yes, I do.
And you find
I don't make it an object to talk about it because I don't want to make anybody feel uncomfortable.
But you also are direct.
They know. Yeah.
It's nice to be accepted as we are, isn't it?
Yeah.
Without secrets.
Right.
It feels good.
I can't be afraid of what man can do to me, you know.
No, you can't.
Then they have power over you.
Man has done enough to you, if you will.
You know, the fear of man is a sneer to your soul. So you can't be afraid of anybody.
No.
Without hurting them, without going, with being nice to them. Not fearing them, but being nice.
Are there any other things you would like to tell me about this whole experience for you that I haven't asked you? Any part of it at all?
I don't know. Just taking care of yourself each day is enough for me. Is enough of a fulfillment for me each day.
And you've certainly achieved a lot for yourself.
Yeah.
Life is hard work.
As long as you have someone special in your life, it makes life a lot easier.
And a special cat.
Two of them.
Two special cats.
One who you can't
see. The pets make a lot of difference, don't they?
Yeah.
I think it's really, really huge. Did your father marry again?
Yes, he did. He's lived in Wakefield for the last 5 years.
And that, and his wife has accepted you?
Yeah.
That's nice.
They call me a miracle because I'm still alive.
You are a miracle.
Yeah.
That must be very, to feel yourself a miracle.
I hope so. I want to be, not that I want to be selfish, but I want to be the longest living hemophiliac that has HIV.
Well, there's a goal for you.
That's
my goal. If I was going to ask you about a life goal, we were.
Not to be selfish, though. Not that I want anybody to die.
No. I understand. It's a positive goal.
Right.
It's not a negative goal. It's a positive goal.
Yeah. Probably that they might have a cure of AIDS someday.
Absolutely, they might. Do you feel that you have a good quality of life within the parameters of
a very good quality of life?
Good.
Yeah.
Do you think that perhaps, I know it's a sort of a strange question, but do you think that all you've been through, the hemophilia and the AIDS, has actually enhanced you at all as a person? It's brought things to you?
Trials produce character. Trials produce perseverance, character, hope. So I still have hope.
You do.
And love. And that's what matters.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've certainly handled it in a very proactive way for yourself.
I tried to, yeah.
Good for you. I'm very, very touched. And it was, this is a very generous gesture, sharing with people what that experience is like.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of the history, is that sharing, so that people can know. Is there anything else that you'd like to say? I'm just going through to see if there's anything that that I have missed that I had wanted to ask you, but I think, is there anything that you would like to add?
No.
I think it was a wonderful interview.
Thank you.
And it was a real pleasure for me to meet you and to share that with you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Whether you have found any connections through your computer, do you communicate with people at all?
No, I don't.
Not on the subject?
No, I don't. No, I do have a book on it, though.
Yeah, but you don't.
I can do it. No, I don't.
You don't go to websites or?
No.
For information or connection?
No.
Do you think people do? Do you find the people in your support group?
I
just need to have you sign there.
I think my case manager, John Ryder, has always encouraged us to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? In fact, he gave me a book on AIDS and the internet, so,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
But you decided not to do that?
No, because I feel I know enough.
Mm-hmm.
I've been educated enough.
Yes, well, you certainly seem to be in.
Yeah. Right here?
Yes, and do you feel that everybody is different in this too? That in fact your experience is different than other people's experience?
Probably.
Yeah. So in fact reading about them, you all have to handle it in your own way.
Yeah. Well, it does sickness develops differently in each person.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, yeah.
Mm. May I ask you, and I can turn it off if you like, is the mental illness that came on you directly related to your hemophilia, or was it just a completely separate?
Probably separate.
Probably separate.
Yeah.
This is a chemical. Was
chemical
a chemical levels, change in yourself?
Yeah.
So that was not something you could say, oh, look, came to you as a result of having hemophilia?
No.
I just wondered if the depression was a result of
that. Well, the depression might have had. I've had the depression since I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
But the HIV has probably intensified it.
Right, of course.